One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Ryan. With me is the normal guys, Dave and Bobby.
Don't call us normal.
Hey, this is too low energy. Let's bump this up. How's everyone doing?
Settle down, Bobby.
Oh, yeah. All right, I'm ready to go. Hey, degenerates listeners!
I'm going to do this like a host of an open mic.
Get the t-shirt cannon out.
This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Hey, drinking on a weeknight. You guys are my people. All that hacky shit.
Let's hear it for the ladies.
Hey, Raiders suck, right? Anyway, this is going to be a little bit uncomfortable. We had to address an elephant in the room. As far as the immediate comedy community in San Diego, some people haven't found out, but we've said on this show before that comedy attracts just some of the worst people.
Oh my God. Just some of the biggest degenerates. A lot of times it's just homeless people who need a place to stay, and open mics are free to sign up for.
Don't say degenerate like that's a bad thing. Yeah. Tarnishing our brand.
You remember the title of this program.
That's right.
Also, this isn't exactly comedy. It's sort of tangentially related.
Yeah, no, I mean, and not just people that want to do comedy, just people that just want to be around those types of people.
Right, right.
So anyways, there was a guy, and he's not, and I'm not going to name him, mainly because I don't know what his fucking name is, turns out. But he was coming around, and a lot of people in town knew him. He was a friend to a lot of us. He was a photographer, still is, I guess. And he did Dave's headshots.
Yep.
He did our friend Mike's headshots. He was a very close confidant to a couple of close friends of mine.
And he was sort of like a rock star photographer type of guy. He was like a big character, big personality. He liked coming around, like hanging out with everybody, like being involved.
Yeah. And the first time I met him, my wife did not like him, and let me tell you why. So the first time my friend Novin, I like to show UFC fights at my place.
Right.
One such night, I was showing a fight, and Novin calls me up. He's like, "Hey, you mind if I bring my friend over? You know, I vouch for him. He's a good guy." And I'm like, "Yeah, it's no problem." And he was fine enough, you know, when he came over. But then the next, you guys know that I either Irish goodbye or pass out at parties.
Yeah,
that's just what I do.
Yes.
And I've just had to tell my friends, you're just gonna have to forgive me for that. The next day, I woke up to a picture of me asleep on my couch on Facebook, and it was him. It was his photo.
And the guy in question.
The guy in question, okay. And he said something like, "Yeah, real great host." And I'm like, first of all, motherfucker, you don't know me like that.
Right. Like, if I did that, that'd be okay.
Yeah. Wait a second. I like how Ryan suddenly becomes Hood. You don't know me like that, bro.
Bobby, I thought you knew me like that. Because you want to fucking piss me off, I'll get Hood real fucking quick. I will go to 0 to 60 faster than you can even imagine. Fuck with me. Have you lost your mind?
Oh, sorry, Tyrone.
So, that's racist. Anyway, so it was just kind of disrespectful because I don't really, you know, it was his first time over. Now,
but that is the kind of guy that he was. The guy who, like, thought he was cool like that, like, too soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, the thing is, I know a few of you are listening that have been to my house and have posted pictures of me sleeping. That's fine. Because if we go way back, that's one thing. And,
right.
and most of the time, it's like in our little secret friend group we have anyway. But anyway, after I woke up and saw that, I'm like, "Oh, that's kind of not cool," whatever. Aaron got a little pissed off at it. I was less so. I went to the fridge, and he had stolen all the beers out of my fridge when he left.
Wait, how'd you know it was him?
Yeah.
Because there was like four people over. It was me, Novin. I know Novin didn't do it. He didn't even drink beer.
Right.
Unless it was Aaron.
That would be great too. He's like he just had some kind of assumption. He's like, "What, bro? I just thought they were party favors. I'm just gonna grab them on the way out."
No, he took like a full case of
that's
beers.
That's insane.
And like, so anyways.
Hey, that's the price you pay for falling asleep early at your own party.
I guess so.
Stay vigilant.
Yeah, I'm like, did that fucking guy take a picture of me sleeping, then take all the beers out of my fridge in our first encounter? So I'm like, well, he's not getting invited over again. But anyways, long story short, he was arrested loudly at a popular hangout in town. Turns out, convicted sex offender, child molester, as per the charges, going under an assumed name. Yep. Well, the name he gave us all was not his name.
Right. Wow.
He'd been on the run from the law for about 4 or 5 years,
right.
Which is when he came into all of our lives, by the way.
Right.
Like, he was just the new guy in town, like, hey, man. And so he was picked up for failing to register.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the first thing I heard was like, oh, there was a convicted sex offender in my house. That's cool. No big deal.
I have a couple questions about the arrest. I don't know if you guys know details. Was he at the bar with some other comedians? Were these people we knew?
From what I heard, now, he was in the comedian circle, but he also had a lot of friends who were chefs.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a little bit of overlap in our town between the chefs and the comedians. And from what I heard, he was with a bunch of chefs.
There's a spot called, I think, Friendly's, which is like a spot for all culinary people to hang out.
Right.
I don't know a lot about it.
He was actually a pretty high-end photographer, and he had started making a niche for himself as doing culinary photography.
Yeah. So he knew all those guys. And one of our good buddies, I don't know if he wants to be named, so I won't, but he's both a chef and a comic.
So he knew him like more than... He hung out with him like twice as much as we did.
When you said he was loudly arrested, are you saying like a SWAT team burst into this bar?
No,
but
several both uniformed and plain-clothed officers who announced you're under the arrest for failing to register as a sex offender. And I mean, he left without incident, but...
So what's interesting to me when I hear something like that is you got to think of what went into it. It's not like some cop was just in the bar and they look over and they go, wait a second, I recognize that sex offender. There had to be some kind of law enforcement operation that tracked this person,
yes,
knew where he was going to be, had a team ready to go.
Yes, there was. Apparently, they'd been following him for weeks.
Wow.
And a few of our friends, oh, fuck, I was hanging out with him during those weeks. We went to lunch. He was over my house.
Yeah.
I'm like, so they were watching him. They were watching me. Oh, yeah. God. So now I'm just known to the law enforcement as consorting with a sex offender.
Oh, man.
Whoopee. So anyways, like, a lot of people don't know how to feel. I mean, well, obviously, now, first of all, let me tell you what the charges were. It was continued sexual abuse of a child, not a minor,
right?
A child.
So
which
break
Bobby
that down. The year that happened, the ages. What did that entail?
So, all right. So that means child, as opposed to minor, means it was someone under the age of 14.
It's usually 14 or under. It depends on jurisdictions and stuff. But assuming this is all California and the whole nine yards.
And now, lest you think we're jumping to too many conclusions, we did. All of us did say to ourselves, okay. Not to defend this, but what does that mean? Because literally...
I had a friend, one of my best friends in high school, when he was 18, he hooked up with a chick who, you know, was criminal, and she didn't tell him, like, he didn't know.
She was 16, though.
I forget, she might have been 15 or something like that, but anyways, like, the father found out, and so he was the one who said shit. My friend spent, like, 5 years in jail and is now a registered sex offender. That's a situation where I'm like,
right.
Not really, though.
And when I was 20, I was dating a 17-year-old, and that was all in the up and up. Her mom knew, and it was cool.
That's still technically legal in the state of California, by the way. You have a 3-year grace period, so if you're 19 and the girl is 17, you're still fine in the state of California.
Yeah, and
the point being, there's a little bit of like maybe
there's
like
a very small gray area. So so a lot of friends, especially one of his closest friends and a good friend of mine, when he first found out, I was like, all right, what does that mean? Did he take a piss next to a school at 2 a.m.?
Yeah.
That can do it.
Yeah, so, and those are the ones that are like, that's not even gray area. Those guys shouldn't be on a registry, but they are. Yeah. Sometimes you pee at midnight and you happen to be within 100 feet of an elementary school, and you can be a registered sex offender because of that.
So everyone did look into that. We looked up the arrest. It's continued sexual abuse of a child. So
Jesus.
It was in 2011, and this dude's nearly 50. So at very best, a 40-something-year-old man was having sex with hopefully consensual sex at very least with someone 14 years old. That is the best case scenario.
Right.
And that is horrific.
Yes.
So, anyway.
Wow, and he was just popping around, and it's funny because a lot of
people... He was in our houses, you know.
Well,
he was
also, like I said, he was very high profile. He was he acted like a rock star. It's like, dude, you can't try to be hiding from the law and making yourself a superstar.
Well, I do love that they caught him, because I think there is something to be
said. I love that they caught him loudly.
Yeah, and publicly, too, where people found out. He didn't get to just sulk away and then disappear.
Right.
I like that happened. I also think that it's weird that they were able to track him down and find him. I wonder how they were able to do. They must have gotten tipped off or something in order to do that. And I'm happy when that happens, because too often you hear like, well, we just lost track of him, and he went on to molest 10 other kids.
Yeah. And
it's very possible, too, that he did it to himself, because, like, again, very high profile. He's always, like, promoting himself. Someone just could have seen some public post, and they're like, oh, my God, I know that dude.
Well, you know,
wait a second.
I had lunch with his probably closest friend in San Diego right after it happened, who was just fucking... I feel so horrible for him because he was a little bit guilt-stricken, even though I told him up and down, you don't blame yourself. He's like, dude, I vouch for that guy. I mean, remember the beginning of the, you know? Yeah. He's like, I brought him into people's lives. I mean, that we know of, no one knew since his original charges has been hurt, thank God, that we know of. But still, he's like, dude, I vouch for that guy. I brought him into your house.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, I don't blame you. You know, there's no way you could know that. All you know of is how he acts when he's around you. I mean, God forbid one of my closest friends turns out he was a sex offender.
Right.
You know, you can't blame yourself for that. But anyways, you know, so it's number one, it's like your best friend, like, has died because you're done. You know, hopefully if you have any character, you're done with that person.
It's,
you know?
It's not, honestly, it might be a little worse because it's like your best friend is a fucking creep.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, can you imagine if someone at this table all of a sudden that, I mean, there's not much that you guys could do to make me end my friendship with you. Very, very little. I think it's like, hurt my wife or you're a sex offender and never told me.
Right, or hurt a child, right.
Yeah. So, you know, so now you're just, your best friend's dead to you and you have all this guilt. It's horrible. But what he told me was basically, though, things started to add up once this came to light. He's like, all right, never had a bank account. Everything was in cash. Never had a residence under his name. He was always living with a chick.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, so he's not been on anyone's lease since his charges.
Wow,
and crazy. So what he believes happened, because he was, again, living with another chick, you know, he would just leapfrog to different chicks.
Yeah, wow. When I first met him years ago, he was married. And then, like, at one point, just a couple years later, because I didn't hang out with the guy that much.
Yeah.
But at one point, he just started showing up with a different chick. And just, like, without any explanation or anything, he's like, oh, okay, I guess he got divorced and is dating someone else. It's just kind of weird. Like,
Yeah. So, anyways.
It's so weird how undercover that could be. Did you guys get vibes from him?
Because
no. Full disclosure, I've never met the guy.
No,
so.
No, I he looks like a creep.
Yeah.
But no. Then again, thank God he never met my 15-year-old daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and
I might have seen different
too
vibes.
Too old.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because I had a weird situation.
Too bold.
I had a weird situation kind of like that at work once where there was this archaeologist, super nice guy, older dude, late 50s, early 60s. He was nothing but the nicest dude in the world. Absolutely a sweetheart. And
the czar of the child porn industry, it turns out.
And then all of a sudden, there's this big hubbub. And we were working on a giant project, like 20, 30 archaeologists would work each day. And the way it would work is you'd break off into teams of 3 to 4 archaeologists, and you'd go to your specific area to start working on a site. And then we'd all get together at the end of the day and compare our notes. And there was this big hubbub one day where there's a whole bunch of people talking and pissed and people are yelling and we can't quite hear what's going on. And we go up there and we find out that somebody had found out that this guy had been a registered sex offender. Now, this guy was on the up and up to the extent that he was registered and using his real name. And
stuff.
He had done his crime and time and now he was a registered sex offender. But somebody had looked him up and found out on Megan's Law that he had sexually assaulted a 14 or under girl sometime in the 80s or something like that. You know, it's one thing if you're a comic or in one of these situations where legally you have to give that person leeway. You're like, well, I guess you did your time. There's nothing we can do about it. This guy's different. He wasn't following the law. But in my field, you're like, you get, sometimes there are 18, 19, 20-year-old girls who are out there with you, and you're out in the middle of fucking nowhere. No cell phone reception, miles away from the nearest person. You could kill this person, bury their body, and just say they ran away, and nobody would ever know. And they
ran away.
Yeah. And they flipped out, and they got him kicked off the project. And I remember thinking as they were trying
to... turn in your whip and your hat.
Yeah.
You're done.
And you're enslaved Asian boy. And they kicked him. They kicked him out.
Oh, that's adding up now, too.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, like, wow, if he is that guy, anybody could be. He was the nicest old man type, just jolly dude. And I thought to myself, man, that really knocked down my faith in humanity. I always thought I'd be able to tell, you know, like I'd always thought, ooh, I'd get a creepy vibe from somebody. Never, never. And I've actually since worked with this guy on multiple jobs because you just have to, you work with people. And still, nicest guy in the world to me.
You really hit it off with sex offenders.
Right. But in the back of my head the entire time, I'm thinking like, what?
Creep, creep.
Yeah,
creep,
exactly.
Creep.
Exactly. And it's a weird feeling because it makes you really distrust people because you're like, fuck, man. I wonder. Now I got a Megan's Law search everybody.
Now, yeah. Now are you going to be like, well, that doesn't matter if you're using a fake name.
That's true.
So, like, now, are you trying to put, like, not develop friendship feelings for him so, like, you don't find yourself in a situation like, all right, I'm bringing over my buddy from work. Just he's a registered sex offender. Right. Okay. All right. Let's just get past that. He raped a child in the 80s.
Yeah.
Let's just grow up.
Yeah. And the whole situation was like, I guess he had basically his wife came home and found him having sex with the babysitter. And that was what happened. And by the way, he's still with his wife. That's the weird thing. Yes.
Ugh.
Yes. He did his time, came out, is still with his wife, the whole nine yards. Yeah. I would never bring him around anybody ever for any reason, but you have to work with people you have to work with. That's just the way things are. But it made me feel instantly distrustful. Do you guys feel that now? Because again, I didn't know this guy, but having known this guy and had him in your house,
he was never part of my inner circle. I have a very,
did get a weird vibe from him. I think it was more the like we were talking about earlier, the kind of douchey behavior. Like he thinks he's too cool too soon, breaking your balls before he knows you, stuff like that. I'm like,
Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to address it because it's sort of to the people who know an elephant in the room. So anyways, let's go on to some lighter topics, will we? No more sex offender talk for the rest of this episode, at least. Next week, we can go right back to you then.
Not quite sex offender, but there was some interesting comedy sex news that kind of broke this week, Dave.
Yeah, the Quincy Jones interview has been making the rounds. Did you guys read it or no?
I did. I loved every minute of it.
I did enjoy it, but I saw the headlines, I saw the sensationalism, and then I read it, I'm like, it's not really that amazing.
Right, because the whole thing was
what are you talking about?
He says a lot of things that aren't even really hot takes if you look at him, and then he doesn't say a lot of things. And here's, like, he talks shit on the Beatles.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Okay.
He said they're the worst musicians ever. Okay. He says U2 doesn't make good music anymore.
True.
We all agree.
Fact.
You know what I mean? But it's shit that he says that everyone's like, it seems... Like,
did you not
on the surface? He's like, oh my god, he talked shit about you too. Yeah, but
did you not read that he knows who Kennedy killed?
No,
Kennedy?
That's the other thing. Is like when he does get to something juicy, oh, I can't talk about that.
No, he did. We
shouldn't talk about that in public.
He named the crime family that did it.
Yes, and then as soon as the interviewer was like, oh, I've heard that theory. What do you think about this? I shouldn't be talking about this in public. That's when he shut it down. He's saying he knows a lot about Hillary Clinton and why she wasn't going to be president. Oh, what are you talking about? I shouldn't be talking about this in public.
No. But then he also said that Michael Jackson ripped off like some of his hits from other people.
That's to me, that's like a not big deal. Like he's dead, whatever. Who gives a shit?
The big thing that everybody made into a big thing was the Richard Pryor thing. And it's interesting because they said he slept with Marlon Brando and his wife later confirmed that. But it had been outed a long time ago that Richard Pryor had bisexual... It's not a big deal. It was the 70s.
That's what I'm saying.
That shit happened.
This is so sensationalized, but when you really look at it, it's like, he's not really saying anything amazing to me.
Yeah. You know what's also funny is people that feel that they need to defend Richard Pryor for being bisexual.
Yeah.
Right.
Like he did something wrong.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like my fucking face was full of like, hey, y'all smearing Pryor when he's not around to defend himself. I'm like... You homophobic asshole.
Right.
He has nothing to defend himself against.
Yes. And by the way, Richard Pryor had a very sordid past. Sordid part of Richard Pryor's past.
You can say that he punched all of his wives in the face. You can say that he lit himself on fire while smoking crack on purpose.
That he grew up in a brothel, the son of a prostitute. Like,
You don't ever say he experimented with his sexuality. How dare you?
Right.
And he had an open relationship with a transsexual woman.
Right. Like, he was his own guy. And that's one of the things that made Richard Pryor so good. He did not give a fuck what you thought.
After reading this, I read an interview with his wife, who's still alive, and she was talking about it. She's like, Richard Pryor talked about it openly.
Yeah.
He joked about it. You can go and look at his old stuff. He joked about it. And maybe people thought he was just joking or they just didn't care. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
And then back to the stuff where he actually could drop a bombshell. The interview asked him about, like, so how do you, what do you do about this Cosby stuff? How does it make you feel? He's like, man, they were all doing it. Cosby, Weinstein, Brett Ratner. Now, he named names that everyone already knows.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when the interviewer's like, what about Cosby, though? He says again, man, I can't talk about this in public. Like every time he had a chance to actually say something, he's
it
like,
reminds me of
shouldn't
Tom,
talk about
if
this.
You listen to this interview Tom DeLonge did on Joe Rogan, it's one of the funniest fucking things you'll ever hear. Tom DeLonge has gone crazy. He's the
lead UFO
singer,
guy.
Yeah, lead singer for Blink 182. He has started a company supposedly to reveal alien technology to the public. He claims to be working with the government and a bunch
Been
of
to Area 51.
Yeah, bunch of defense industries, and he knows a bunch of secrets. And the government contacted him because the government felt that Tom DeLonge would be the right person to reveal the interaction with aliens.
Hi, Tom. This is Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about a few things. First of all, I love the big fan, big fan of Enema of the State. Secondly, we gotta talk about alien autopsies.
They're like, the government's like, what are we gonna do? How are we gonna reveal all this sensitive information? Let's find somebody who knows three chords on a guitar. So it was hilarious because he has this interview with Joe Rogan, and anybody who listens to Rogan has the most like diverse, crazy group of people on his show who he treats very respectfully. And he had Tom DeLonge in, and halfway through the interview with Tom DeLonge, he goes, Tom DeLonge like gets up to go get something out of the fridge, and Rogan's just like, all right, so I'm interviewing a crazy person right now. He's whispering into the mic in the middle of the podcast. And,
dude, that's hilarious.
And he was, because he kept saying, like, I know, yes, similar things. I know the secrets behind JFK. I know all the secrets to anti-gravity and alien visitation. And they were like, so how'd you figure this out? And he's like, well, when I was touring around in the 90s with Blink-182, I had a lot of time in the van to read books. And people are like, that's not really secret information there, Tom.
They were written by guys who write books.
Yeah.
So
also, I was doing all the drugs.
Yeah.
So it just...
Well, that's the problem. You know, it's similar to the conspiracy. It is a conspiracy theorist. It's similar to the stuff we've dealt with the flat earthers and other people. It's the idea that people think they have some kind of privileged knowledge, like they have some kind of special insight to things.
Right.
And there are certain people who have that privileged knowledge or certain insight.
I was an insider in Washington. Right. I have seen things. Also, buy my pillow. Oh, wait, that's a different guy.
Yeah, and like there are certain people who have that. It's not fucking Tom DeLonge. It's just not. Like
no, it's Travis Barker. Clearly.
Yeah, and the like
his tattoos are a map to Area 51.
And every time Joe Rogan
the Da Vinci Code.
And every time Joe Rogan would ask him, like, oh, okay, so specifically, what is this information that you have about aliens? Something he's like, I just can't talk about that publicly.
See,
right,
that's
now.
Going back to Quincy Jones. That's what I'm saying. Is like every time he had a chance to actually say something, he didn't. And the
right.
stuff that he did say was like, I felt like no big deal. And also, like, I'm not saying he is a great fucking musician, producer, all that shit. He's amazing. He's probably the best that ever did it. But, like, his ego kept shining through, too. And that always, like, bugs me a little bit. Like, I remember the interview asked me, he's like, what's the most innovative thing you've ever done? And he said, are you fucking kidding me? Everything. He literally said that. And the guy's like, so everything you've done is innovative? He's like, yeah, everything I've done is innovative.
Do you guys remember when Little Richard
took an innovative shit the other day? It was great. It was a handstand.
Do you guys remember when Little Richard had a meltdown at the Grammys in like 1992? He was like presenting an award with Buster Poindexter of New York Dolls and Hot 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 fame. He went on stage and he was just staring at Buster Poindexter with his pompadour. He's like, I used to wear my hair like that. You stole that from me.
Oh, yeah.
All you people stole everything from me. I was the innovator of rock and roll. You never gave me no Grammy. And he went on and like Buster Poindexter, Joe Hanson, it was like, hey, man, let's change. He's like, shut up. He's like, he just shut him up. He's like, shut up. You never gave me no Grammy. You all stole everything from me. You're all a bunch of thieves. And like, then he wouldn't announce the Grammy. He's like, and
oh,
the winner
great.
Is me. And he's like, come on, man, shut up. Oh,
amazing.
It was great TV.
I don't
cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Man. Yeah. like Quincy Jones, he talked shit on the Beatles. He talked shit on Michael Jackson. He talked shit on Trump. He talked shit on Cyndi Lauper, oddly enough, which is so fucking weird. But like, he didn't say anything really amazing to me.
Yes.
Like the craziest thing he said
Lauper stole Shebop from me.
He basically said she was a bitch during the recording of We Are the World.
What?
Like, honestly, the craziest thing he said was that Michael Jackson stole a lot of musical stuff.
Yeah. Oh, but or that Prince couldn't dance and tried to hit Michael with his car. Come on. That was gold.
That is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want to like come up with a rule for interviews where it's like if you reveal something super shocking, you can't do the play it off. I can't talk about it right now. You either shut the fuck up and don't say it or you get into it. You can't
right,
do that.
Right.
I'm going to tease you with it and then not get into
oh,
it.
Oh, man.
Right.
Our buddy Rob from the Strikers called me out. I was over at his apartment one time. I was like, hey, did you hear I almost got into it with that asshole Jason? He's like, oh, yeah, what went on with that? I'm like, nah, I don't want to get into it. He's like, oh, motherfucker,
yeah,
no,
right?
No, you're being a douchebag. I'm like, you're very much right. Okay, I guess I have to tell
yeah, that's the interview equivalent of like, you wouldn't know her. She's from Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, I met her at summer camp. She goes to a different school.
Ryan, you did get into it with somebody this this weekend, didn't you? You got in with two large somebodies.
Oh yeah, I got to I got to return to Fist Combat Wrestling. I've ended my hiatus with them. And one thing I wanted to do because when I like I said I announced for this wrestling federation and I do commentary, but I'm like one of my conditions for return was dude, come on, let me get in there and do something.
Yeah, let me be involved.
I get I'm not a trained wrestler, but enough of non-trained fucking comics that who are wrestlers coming to comedy and attempt to tell jokes. Let me fucking, come on.
Now, I do remember that when you first started with them months ago, you had kind of broached the idea of like, hey, let me be involved in a little work. And I remember a lot of the wrestlers like bristled, like, you're going to get hurt. You don't know what you're doing. You're not trained.
Right.
They were almost like insulted that you even
said
that.
They were.
But myself, growing up as a wrestling fan, I would be the same. I'm like, dude, let me do something. Yeah. Come on.
Let's address,
I'm here.
Let's address a funny part of this, though. They fake fight. For a while, Ryan was a real MMA fighter. Right. So they're like, you can't handle fake fighting, Mr. Real Fighter. You don't know what to do.
I'm like, the worst case scenario, you actually punch me. I'm equipped for that. Yeah, but that was a lot of fun. So they let me get in the ring, and True Grit, the tag team champions, they gave me a good stomp, and it was so much fun.
Oh, yeah, I was watching the video today. I didn't know that you had that in the works, so I was watching. I was like, holy shit, they both hit you. You went down on the mat. Then they started stomping. Like, more people rushed in. It was amazing. It was so good.
It was so fun. It was a childhood dream come true. I loved it.
If only they would have got you with a chair. Like, I wish you could have gotten a chair.
I'm working my way up.
Or like a staple gun thing.
Yeah, I'll draw the line there.
So, Bobby, you did some work this week. You had some shows?
I did. I had a show on Thursday, which, you know, what's funny is we had an interesting last few shows, which was we had the show that we mentioned was
together
just,
as a group, you mean?
Yeah. Which was just a disaster at the landing, and it was horrible. We talked about that before. And then we followed it up with a great show at Winston's. That was fantastic. Another comedian who I've worked with before saw me at that Winston show and basically said, hey, you did really well. Would you like to come do this room I have up north? And I was like, yeah, sure, great. And you, Ryan, you had actually told me that this is a fantastic room and I need
to go. I've had good experiences
so,
there.
So I was like, oh yeah, I'll definitely go up to this room. So I went up, that was on Thursday. Now, we'll get into something in a little bit as to why I wasn't feeling 100% when I went up there, but I ended up just eating.
You just had a talk with a sex offender at work.
Right. But I ended up eating a dick and I was...
Is that why you didn't feel good for the show?
Yeah, exactly. And that's fine. You know, sometimes that happens. But it's one of those things where, you know, the roller coaster. I don't know if you guys are like this, but I feel like this, where the last reaction you had is what you carry with you for the rest of the week. You know,
absolutely.
Like you can do 8 great shows in a row. If you then have a bad show, until you have another show to get over it, you just walk around for the rest of the week like, I kind of feel off.
Not
right
just
now.
The week, till my next good show, I feel like a fraud. That's why I can't understand MMA fighters that retire at a loss.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. I'd keep going until I'd like put me in against the first time. Timer, let me knock him out, and then throw my gloves in the middle of the cage.
Let me go against the ring girl. She's been talking some shit.
Yeah.
You'd end up being fucking Ruben Warpath Villarreal, just jobber that never wins a fight.
I have that feeling where it's a what have you done for me lately attitude for comedy, where if I have not scored a hit, then whatever my last miss was sticks around with me. Dave, we were talking.
Quincy will just say you stole it anyway.
You went out to Albuquerque this week, and you were saying you might have had some swings and misses as well.
Yeah, I had 2 shows in New Mexico, one in a little town called Mescalero in middle of nowhere. It's basically just a casino, I think, and then one in Albuquerque. First show, and it was a show where like the headliner brought me along as the feature, so I was doing 30 minutes.
Sure.
First show, it was in a nightclub inside a casino, so people were there, not a nightclub, a comedy club. People were there to see comedy. Small crowd, and it was a kind of setup where like the sound guy announces me.
Yeah.
So I kind of go up cold.
Yeah.
I do 30 minutes to
it's
a cold crowd.
It's hard to do 30 cold if you're not a name,
dude.
It's
tough, dude.
I've done it and it's hard.
I did okay. Like it wasn't, it was like an average show for a cold crowd. Like I got some laughs, got some giggles. But
you need a host,
they
man.
They were pretty tight.
Yeah.
And then I brought up the headliner. He did pretty good.
Yeah.
And sold some merch after, which was always fun. But then, so the next night I knew it was in Albuquerque, big town. Bigger casino, comedy club in a casino. I'm like, okay, this will be good. Fucking glamorous stage, like nice setup. Like the kind of shit you'd see on like a Netflix special.
Sure.
Like, you walk off from behind the stage, which we all know is rare. Like usually we're climbing onto the stage from the front.
Yeah.
But again, kind of a small crowd. And when we showed up, the sound guy told us this was literally the first night in 4 years that their house MC had called in sick. So again,
he went up cold.
Had to go cold. I actually went up and did the like announcements.
Oh, wow. No.
I had my hoodie on zipped. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to fuck with him. Like, so I went up, I did the announcements. Like, okay, no heckling. Put your cell phone away. You guys ready to have fun? Make noise for next comic, Dave Counts. Just took the hoodie off and started doing it.
That's pretty good.
They enjoyed it, and that was probably equivalent to the biggest laugh I got the entire set.
Oh, no.
Also pretty
You're essentially
tight.
A prop comic at this point.
Yeah, also pretty
more
tight.
More props, more props, more props.
The headliner also, he struggled as well. It was just, it was fucking tough. So 2 really tough shows, and When you're doing 30 minutes, man, that weighs on you when it's a tight crowd. Like, yes. Oh my God, all right, yeah. They don't like this joke. Let me struggle through this and get to another one.
That is the worst part about being a headliner or feature where I do that much. Because I regularly do 25 to 30 now. And let me tell you, when I used to, you know, go up, when I was used to do like 8 to 10 minutes, you go up and they don't laugh at your opener, you know you're fucked, but you're like, yeah. All right, well, this too shall pass. I'll just speed through these jokes and get off at fucking 7. Yeah. But like when I go up when I'm doing 30 and my first two doesn't hit, I'm staring down a long road.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, all right. 28 more minutes.
Well, plus it's, you know, it comes to what you can and can't do. So, like, for me, it was my personal fault that I failed on that particular show, because what I should have done is I had a few good opening jokes and then I went into material and they weren't digging it. They just didn't like the material that I was going into. And what I should have done is what you need to do when you're an opener in that situation and they stop digging your material and you go into crowd work, right? That's what you need to do. And I was, I was off my game and so I didn't do it. That's all my fault. But you can't do that as a headliner. You can't just be like, all right, I'm going to abandon 45 minutes of material and just talk about this guy's hat for the next time.
You know what I did one time? And the next time that I bomb this hard and have this much time to kill, because I mean, you can't just I'll bail early, certainly, but there's a certain point where if you bail too early, you aren't getting paid.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm certainly not going to have no money for this horrible experience.
Yeah.
So I sat on the stool after like my first 10 straight minutes, got nothing, but nothing. So I sat, and this was about 3 or 4 years ago, I sat on the stool and went, Let me tell you what it feels like to bomb. And I went into it. I'm like, first of all, you're very lucky tonight that you have a comic that knows he's not doing well. Because I'm going to tell you right now, guys, 90% of comics would think that this is crushing.
Yeah.
They would walk off this stage after doing this badly and go, that's right. Yeah. Who wants to take a picture with me? And I just went through the whole thing. I'm like, and I know you're not enjoying it. And I have to stay up here to get paid. And it was sad. And to me, it was very satisfying.
Yeah, it was honest, right?
That's a form of crowd work. You're like making everything present here in the room, like addressing what's going on.
Right.
And I think in a situation like that, there's really only two options. You can do crowd work like that, or you can address the situation, or you can just start doing local references. Because any crowd loves that shit. Yeah. You start talking about their town, their neighborhood, shit like that. And I didn't follow, Shores, I didn't follow your advice, because you told me when you go on the road, pick up a couple pamphlets from the hotel and just look up
great
local
advice.
Shit.
That's what you got to start with, man. Anyways, anyone go to a Super Bowl party at all?
Oh, my God. Guys, I went to what turned out to be the world's worst Super Bowl party. So,
I don't know. Remember last year's Super Bowl party that we did on the show?
Oh, okay.
That was a fucking disaster.
Wow,
low bar.
Now I'm wondering, what is the world's worst Super Bowl party? So this one was a little different, because this was a friend of mine, very good friend.
We didn't have mics to capture the experience and broadcast how much we fell on our face.
Well,
we
were fine. It was us and three people showed up to a 200-seat venue. But no, this was different. This was a friend's place, and it was family-oriented. I brought my family. There was 5 or 6 other families there. We're all really good friends from a very long time. And so the party itself was great. They had a taco truck catering. We had a lot of fun. The game was great, if you guys ended up watching it. Great game. Really fun time. Leave the party. Everything's great. Next day, everything's fine. Monday night, I start feeling a little queasy, and I think, I ate some weird hot dogs. I wonder if I have food poisoning. Starting Monday night, I just start throwing up, just relieving everything in my body. I'm thinking, oh, man, I got some really bad food poisoning. By about 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, my wife's at the door knocking now, and she's like, get out of there. I have to throw up. And I go, oh, my God, we don't really eat the same shit. We're going over, and our head's like, what did we eat? What's going on? And then I get up in the morning. I'm like, okay, I got to go get the kid. You know, it's 7 a.m. I go to go get my son. I give him his bottle. He starts throwing up. And I was like, okay, so it's not food poisoning. Like, we're all sick. We have something.
It's like the pie eating scene in Stand By Me.
Dude, I had so many moments this week. At one point, like 2 days ago, I picked up my son and I was holding him in front of me and I was like, hey, bud, how you doing? How we going? And he opened his mouth.
They threw up in each other's mouth. It was 2 men, 1 cup.
2 men, 1 bottle.
2.5 men, 1 cup.
He opened his mouth and did the Exorcist right into my chest. It was like a fire hose. Just like he was.
Well, when it's your own.
Yeah. Dude, I felt like a 1950s protester, and he was like a Southern sheriff just shooting me with a fire hose. So come Tuesday, I'm like, oh shit, I wonder what happened. I have no idea where we got this. And I sent all my friends a text like, hey, anybody else sick? And people start coming back like, yeah, I'm really sick. Yeah, me too. And then one of the guys who got, turns out he got it the first, so to speak, he got it on Monday afternoon. He was like, yeah, I'm sick. I went to the doctor on Monday afternoon and they said it was probably a viral infection, but all these people are sick. So it's probably food poisoning instead. And I was like, well, no, it's not food poisoning. My son has it. He's a baby. He didn't have any hot wings. He didn't eat the chicken. He's fine. And he's like, yeah, you just got some food in his mouth when you were feeding him. And I was like,
what are you talking about?
Yeah, no. Yeah, when you threw up in your son's face, that's what cost
it. I was like, no. And I can show you guys this text stream. It's crazy because this is on a stream with like 10 people.
Who is this again?
This is just a buddy. This is one of the guys who was at the...
Starting to sound like he knows he's patient zero and he's trying to deflect.
I wish that's I would have figured like. That out earlier, right? And so
he's that guy on the crew of the spaceship in the sci-fi movie that knows he's gotten the mutant virus but doesn't tell the rest of the crew.
I don't think the virus is that bad. You guys are really being xenophobic.
There's scenes where he goes back to his bunk and pieces of his skin are flaking off and he just covers it with long sleeves.
Yeah, he's the guy who got bit by the zombie without anyone noticing.
Right, exactly.
I have this back and forth where I'm like, listen, dude, bro, first of all, food poisoning doesn't take 36 hours to get it. And by the way, as people were coming in, 48 hours later. Like, ooh, you know, that doesn't happen. You know, so it's 6 to 12 hours after you do this. And also, you have to eat the food. You can't be a baby that was close to the food. And he's like, no, I talked to my uncle. He's a pediatrician. It's food poisoning. I was like, no, what are you talking? And I'm yelling.
Your uncle's a quack.
I know. And I'm yelling at him because he's a teacher. And there's other teachers, and I'm like, don't go to school, you asshole. This is a horrible disease. This is the sickest I've been in years. I have not been this sick in years. Not only is everything coming out of every end, my body feels like I got like I was in an actual beatdown by two giant wrestlers in a ring. And I'm like, whatever you do, do not go to school, man. He's like, nah, it's food poisoning. We're all good. We start counting it. 16 people have gotten this disease at this party. So this was like a pandemic.
Oh, my God.
And it's brutal and just devastating.
Have you gone to a doctor that cleared you to not be contagious anymore?
No. Yeah, why aren't you in a bubble right
exactly,
now?
Exactly, right. Don't worry if you guys can't smell it. I have bleached the shit out of this house.
No, I can smell it.
Yeah, this place
still
is
don't trust you.
Yeah, right? You shouldn't. It was absolutely devastating disease. And he argued back and forth on this text string. He sent over 100 messages making this stupid ass argument.
Why can't you say, sorry, I got you all sick? It's all I want.
Not even sorry. And it wasn't, by the way, he got it at noon the next day. So it wasn't him. And I'm still trying to figure out what this is, like why he's defending it. I even said at one point, I'm confused. Why are you making this completely facetious claim? What are you doing? He's like, it's not, what, you think you're always right? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Now.
That's the thing. That's like the symptom of our culture right now is like it turns into an I'm not wrong mentality.
Yes, and it was so...
People just get too defensive
about
shit.
And it was so...
They're saying they're not wrong while simultaneously accusing you of thinking you're always right.
Right.
At the same time, I'm right. And if you say that I'm not, then you're a know-it-all.
And I felt like saying, like, dude, if this was a conversation about who the best football team next year is going to be, I would have dropped this 85 messages ago. This is about whether or not you're about to spread a fucking pandemic. You need to stop and recognize what you're doing. And
I have to get back to helping the sex offender to get that mummy.
And then, by the way, the next day after we're having this argument, my niece, who lives next door to me, comes over. Now, she's sick. She had hung out with us.
She had eaten the chicken rice.
She had hung out with us on Monday before we knew we were sick, but obviously hadn't been at the Super Bowl party. And I was like, all right, case settled. My niece is sick. It's clearly a viral infection. He responds, no joke. I swear to God, I wish he was kidding. It sounds like something you would read from a Donald Trump tweet. He responds back, your niece goes to public school. She just caught something else.
Whoa.
That actually makes sense. I think he's right.
Fucking crazy. I feel like I'm in a bizarro world. I don't know what's going
on. Big reveal. His friend's Tom DeLonge.
And I'm like, I'm getting infuriated because I know he's going to go just infect more people and stuff. Later, it turns out because his wife broke down and his wife is a very honest and very, very sincere and just like good human being. She texted all of our wives and she's like, hey, I'm really sorry. Our daughter was sick the night before the Super Bowl. We thought she was healthy by the time we brought her to the party. Obviously, she wasn't. She got all you guys sick. I'm very sorry. And I'm like, oh, that was it. You just spent an entire day and hundreds of text messages defending this completely indefensible, idiotic idea because you thought we would take responsibility. And by the way, you bring your daughter to a Super Bowl party because you thought she was healthy? I don't blame you. I don't think that's a problem. You thought she was healthy. That's fine. You defending it for 48 hours makes you an asshole.
Yeah, no, Bobby, I don't know if you're like me on this, but that's not good enough. I need a mea culpa from the dude.
I want him to say. A big fucking basket of fruit, my man.
Yeah.
All I got, and this is it, is later. midway through another argument where he's still making the case, well, it's you know, you might be right, but I still think it's food poisoning. At some point he goes, oh, by the way, I just found out that my mother-in-law got it from me. So, yeah. And that was it. There was no, I'm so sorry, I just wasted everyone's time. Or, by the way, I actually knew it's from my daughter who was sick the day before. Just like, not even, nothing. Just, oh, and it is this, by the way.
I
that's
see.
Not, dude, not good enough for me. I would be hammering that shit like, so you were wrong. So everything you said is wrong. Right. So you were ignorant of this the whole time.
Not just wrong, but everybody knew you were wrong. We could all see that babies can't get food poisoning from something they don't eat.
Do you guys remember that scene in Casino when they find the guy cheating and they bring him the bathroom?
Hammer, yes.
That is the one. Yes. I would need you guys holding his hand to a chopping block, and I'd be twirling a ball peen hammer.
Yeah,
like,
right.
So food poisoning, huh? I wouldn't do it, but I need him to feel that fear.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll tell you what, I was going to go for the other scene where they had the guy's head in the vise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, fucking food poisoning.
You were defending food poisoning.
I'm just going to go Goodfellas with a ballpoint pen and just fucking...
Yeah.
Go get your fucking food poisoning.
And it was, yeah, it was super infuriating because it was a horrible disease and everybody got sick. And also I was like, oh, by the way, if you would have texted everybody Monday what the doctor had told you, which is that you had a viral infection, you learned that Monday afternoon, my niece would not have been over Monday night. She got her entire family sick. Three little girls and their two parents got sick because you didn't tell us that.
Did you tell them
that? No.
Texting that right now. Yeah. Texting that right fucking now.
His wife is such a sweetheart. I'm afraid she'd feel guilty about it. She's sweet.
You told us before we started recording that you had a story that was just going to frustrate the shit out of us. You undersold that, dude. I am so fucking angry right now.
You have no idea. I got to show you the text lines, too.
No,
where
don't.
Like,
I'll just get
where
angry.
Where I'm like, my son got it.
I will punt that phone out your door like a football.
It was infuriating, and it reminds me of the thing that we don't tell people they're wrong enough. Like, we don't make it enough of a thing where we go, like, especially as children.
Oh, yeah,
we covered that. You need to acknowledge you're wrong. We're gonna tell you you're wrong. We're going to make a big deal about you not yelling about not being wrong when you're clearly wrong. Now, it's one thing if you have a reasonable opinion. You know, if people had gotten sick who had only eaten the food and, like, it made sense that it could be, and it happened 6 to 12 hours later, and it made sense. He had an unreasonable, literally impossible, actually physically impossible explanation that he was using that ended up getting more people sick.
No, his pediatrician uncle backed him up.
Right. I was
he
like,
doesn't even have an uncle, does he? Fuck this guy, dude.
All right, as per the beginning of the show, are we sure he's going under the right name here?
Yeah, all right.
How much do you know? How long have you known him? Have we Googled him?
Yeah, I've known him for about 20 years. It's about right. But still, one of those infuriating moments where later on, now my butt, Damian Mercado, who also got sick from this, he was much madder at it because his whole thing is, he's like, I got buzzed. I was on that message chain. I got buzzed 200 times by this idiot constantly yelling about how he wasn't wrong on something that everybody looking at this message chain knew he was wrong and got us sick by.
Do you guys remember when text cost 10 cents a piece? I think we need to go back to that sometimes.
Yeah.
Back when I was like 20, I was on this fucking ghetto phone plan.
Yeah.
It would say every time I sent a text, like, it'd be at the bottom, like, that just cost you 10 cents off your prepaid line.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, you really thought about your text messages when they costed 10 cents.
Yeah, right.
We need to get back to that. Plus, no more group texts. People would not be doing that anymore.
I'll go one better. Let's charge per letter, per character on a text message.
Yeah, you know, but the thing is, that same summer when I was 20, I told this chick I was dating, who was a little crazy. I'm like, oh, by the way, I get charged 10 cents a text.
Oh.
We got in a fight. She's like, I'm text, gonna text,
wow.
Use text, up text, your data plan.
Wow.
And I just watched as my fucking phone plan went in the toilet over the course of an evening. I'm like, well played, Annie.
Yeah, that is.
Well played.
That is good vigilante justice.
You didn't know what I did. But I totally deserved it. But that's not the point.
Yeah.
All right, let's call it a week. I got some dates to read out here first. You know, I read these off my calendar, and like, seriously, there's been a few times where I'm like, all right, I'm going to be at Winston's in Ocean Beach on the 23rd, and on the 27th, I'm going to be at Couples Counseling with Dr. Wack. Oh, fuck.
So wait a minimum of that one.
We're fine, by the way.
Better material on that one, I hear.
All right, but for real, I'm going to be at the Main Tap in El Cajon. That's just me without the boys, unfortunately. That's the Main Tap at El Cajon, Friday, February 3rd. On March 1st, I'm going to be at the Bay Bridge Brewing Company. I'm doing a charity set for AIDS Life Cycle. March 9th, I'm going to be at the Comedy Palace in Kearney Mesa. And on March 15th, we've talked about it a bunch. We had that disaster show at the Landing.
They're bringing us back.
Get that taste out of our mouth,
guys. We really need you to come to this one because I don't know why. We could just leave that in our past and say, you know what? We're not doing it here again. Yeah. We have some weird...
I thought it was fun.
We have
I'll be honest, I thought it was fun.
We have some weird self-torture. I really like that owner. He's just such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need you to be, if you're going to go to any of those shows, it's going to be all three of us March 15th at the Landing in El Cajon. I am going to be stressing it every week. All right, I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week, cruising with the twos. I have to get back to helping the sex offender to get that mummy. Ooh, 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 yeah, time passing by. Oh, that time passing by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by. I'm just known to the law enforcement as consorting with a sex offender.